everyone.
Oh my God, you get, see? You move, they replace you, that's it.
All right. Peter Alcoholic. So we looked at steps one and two to point it to the solution. And I just have to, a little ADD moment. alcoholics can't count and tell time. And I'm looking at the schedule. We're not even close to the schedule, so we're just gonna go for it here. We look at chapter five, how it works. We identified a problem. Lack of power is my dilemma. Had to find power. Where do I find this power? They say go in. It's not out there. I need an inside journey, inside job. And I'm about to make a decision to get to that power in three and turn everything over to this power that I don't know. And if we think about it, they're asking us to walk, to take a journey, to walk a path that we've never walked before, to experience a God we've never met before. And as someone writes, and the only way I can see the path is by the light that burns in my heart to know God. So we come in for the first time to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they say, you better go through the steps, you better go through the steps, and you see people doing the steps who seem to be doing okay, and we agree. And sometimes we bottom out in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we think, you know, we're working a great program. By the way, we say that, but usually means we don't have a program. Or, you know, hey, there's Joe, he's in a program. There's Mary, she's in a program. We're not in a program, we're in a fellowship. The program is something completely different that very few of us work, but many of us say we do. And this program talks about a very narrow path to which we're going to walk on and passing through a very narrow gate. Many of us are going to walk in a very wide road and a very big gate and have emotional hangovers regularly and try to cover our tracks and have no clue what's going on because I'm always lying. And the ego is running is really my God. So the road is about to get narrow quick here. But I don't know where I'm going. In fact, each time I go through the work, I don't know where I'm going again. And only an alcoholic can be grateful for not knowing where we're going. It's none of my business. I need to know what's going to happen. I did my due diligence. I've found out. I put the steps on a spreadsheet, and this is going to happen to me. I'll have a 40% increase in spiritual behavior when I'm done. It just doesn't work that way. The spiritual life makes absolutely no sense to a thinking mind. And I'm trying to approach this whole spiritual thing, this whole spiritual journey, with my mind. Which means I'm already in trouble because I'm just going to reinvent myself. I can't start a spiritual experience with the answer in my mind already. So I surrender. And I go through the work again and again and again, and I don't know where it's going to take me to. What is going to be revealed to me? Is it going to be life-changing? Is it just going to be a little bit more awareness? I have no idea, but it's none of my business. But again, I don't know where this is going to take me to. The only difference now is if I'm seeking God, I know at some point it's going to be good for me to be of service to others. And that has become incredibly important to me. What kind of, am I an effective agent for this power called God? My book says he's the principal, we're his agents. We're going to read that in a little bit, which means we represent power because an agent represents the principal. How am I doing? Or am I, they used to say, I better be the best copy of this big book that someone sees because it may be the only one they ever see. How am I doing? Am I an AA angel and a house devil? I mean, how's that look? And so we get to step three, and it says how it works. And I wish I had a dollar for every time I've heard somebody say, I don't know how it works, but I know it works. Well, open up to page 58 and find out. My Lord. I got, you know, Joe the old timer with 7 million years sober in the back of the room. I don't know how it works, God damn it, but I know it works. Well, maybe you should go through the steps and find out that it's pretty good, you know. How what works? how living in a world of the Spirit, how this God works, how this program works, how it works. It's not a mystery. They didn't hide it. It's not this, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls of AA are in the back somewhere, and and only Harry knows where, or Tom Needham knows where they are, and that's it. You know, it's open. Did you ever go to a big book meeting, a step meeting, and there's no big books in the room? You go to a big book. It's happened to me. Go to a big book meeting, and you look around for the shades, and there's no shades in the room. They're keeping it a secret. And the other thing I found, I just get on a soapbox here, ought to be passionate, ought to challenge, but not to use this book as a weapon and be a big book lawyer. Oh, you misquoted something. The intent is what counts. I don't need to know all the commas and all where the periods are and where the paragraphs. I know people can recite this book upside down. I don't want to have a cup of coffee with them. Right. It's about the spiritual transformation. Don used to tell us attraction, not promotion. If I'm slamming you with this book, the day you bottom out, you're not coming to me for help. Because I'm all these big book people are this way. We have warring theologians and Alcoholics Anonymous. The big bookers against the non-big bookers and vice versa. And then we have this wonderful thing. The big bookers against the big bookers. Because we did it really right. You're not so right. Where's God in that? Rarely have we seen a person fail. Fail at what? God consciousness and sobriety. Who will slowly follow this path. Decision in three, the path to 429, which takes me to God. My book delivers me or unveils this God to me that's been there all along. And the resistance that I'm going to experience in seeking God is all coming from the mind, no one else. That's unmanageability, which is the internal condition, never out there. It's me and my mind still playing God and me still worshiping it. I bristle at antagonism when you talk to me about God. Why? The Spirit doesn't bristle at antagonism. The Spirit is looking to be fed. It's my mind. It's a threat. The ego's about to commit suicide and wants no part of it. No one wants no God. Let's not talk about God. Let's talk about me. You know how alcoholics are, right? It goes like this. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me? Yeah. Okay. Those who do not recover are people cannot or will not completely give themselves to a simple program. Usually men and women are constitutionally incapable of seeing the truth. As to my condition. Now, it doesn't only mean with booze, because I could be in AA not drinking, but maybe I got these other things. I can't manage money, and I insist on managing money. I'm having a problem in the sex life, and I insist on managing my sex life. I'm having a problem, fill in the blank, and I insist on managing it. I'm incapable of being honest with that area of my life. Everything's got to go to God. It says there are such unfortunates, they're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. I'm naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. This spiritual life demands rigorous honesty. My book is real clear about that. There's no little dishonesty. It demands rigorous honesty in all areas of my life. How am I doing so far? Uh-oh. There are those two who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them have the capacity to be honest. So the first time I'm going through this book and I read grave emotional and mental disorders, I thought it was folks who had serious psych issues. Those poor people. And then my sponsor says, no, they're talking about you. And I said, well, I'm not on medication. I'm not bipolar. I don't have psych issues. I'm not a sociopath. He says, no, yes, you are. He says, how many times did you return to things that were killing you? That's insanity. You have a grave emotional mental disorder unless you get spiritually fit. You will return on a suicide mission, you go back to things that kill you. That's your grave emotional mental disorder. Or as we used to say, repeating the same thing over, expecting different results. There's a breakdown in communication. Right. They have a fancy, I'm in a treatment center business, and they're ripping off Dr. Silkworth regularly. And they've upped it. They've given it really fancy language. They call it now chronic thought disorder. We call it bite a lie and the truth will get you. Someone says to me, Pete, cross the avenue, I'm going to blindfold you. I say, I'm not doing that, I'll get killed. That's sane rational thinking. They use the jaywalker in this book. Now, chronic thought disorder, or the jaywalker, or buying a lie is, okay, I'll try it. I'll take a bet, and I walk across the street, and I get hit by a car. Now, that's Monday. Tuesday, I'm not doing that anymore, and Mike gives me a blindfold, and my mind doesn't remember the pain, just like the jaywalker, and I bite a lie again. That's chronic thought disorder. And over time, it gets worse and worse and worse because we buy more lies, we get into more jams, we get into more trouble, and we try to overcome a sick mind with the same sick mind. That's chronic thought disorder. It's insanity that I live with. They were talking about this way back when, and some fancy psychiatrists and doctors come up with chronic thought disorder. Like you were saying earlier, the names get longer and bigger, so I don't even understand what's going on. Just medicate me. That's a whole other topic. Don't get me started.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. It says, but we have the capacity to be honest. So this vessel God put allows me to walk around in has become polluted. And so what I need to do is emptying out, this purging or the death of self. So this glass of water, this bottle of water, I don't know, it's about maybe 8 or 10 ounces. If I leave it here and come back in a year, you can't drink this water. The container is fine, just a little dirty. Rinse it off. And what do I do is empty out the contents in there and put fresh water in there and I can drink it. It's fine. The container might be a little bit older, a little bit more banged up, but it's okay. It's what was going on in here, or perhaps currently, that needs to be emptied out. The process of recovery is removal, never addition. I don't need anything. Everything I need to walk this journey, God gave me when I got here, not to AA, when he brought me here. The reason why I was made, was born and made sober. I've accumulated things over the years. I've accumulated resentments. I've learned prejudice. I've learned how to lie. I like lying. I like being an ego. I want things. And I live up to these standards that are unrealistic. It all had to go. The purging, the emptying out. Capacity to be honest. Capacity to have God. The capacity to grow with God. The vessel is there. It's okay. Whether we're 5 feet tall or 6 feet tall, the vessel is the vessel. God is God. The interesting thing is when God shows up, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, God shows up. And whether I'm with children, I'm working, or driving in the car, something happens in that moment. We say, oh my God, it's God. And I've been chopping wood and carrying wood and chopping wood and carrying wood. I'm trying to do the steps. I'm going through the steps. I'm talking to my sponsor. I'm saying, when is this thing going to happen? Not on my time. And here I am, you know, maybe driving to work and boom. It's on me. I was coming back. I always like to tell this story. Coming back from Pennsylvania. I think I was on that Pennsylvania freeway or something. Long turnpike. Thank you. Are you here to make amends for that awful road or something? I mean, that is the worst. I mean, that makes Newark Airport look good. But anyway. And so I'm driving back from work, marketing all day, and I'm working with my old sponsor, and I'm into making amends and moving into 10-11, and my marriage is falling apart at the time. It's a disaster. My ex-wife can't stop drinking, smoking weed, and doing coke, and I got married for good and all. I mean, you just don't get married, you don't get divorced, and it's falling apart, and I'm going through the work, and I'm, God, please just comfort me, and I don't know what to do, and so I go through the work. And I'm driving back from Pennsylvania, and boom. It was as if there was something wrapped me up, and the tears began, and I'm weeping, but they weren't sorrow tears. There was comfort, the nearness of our books of our Creator. Something different happened. And so I continue to seek. It says our stories disclose in a general way what I used to be like, living life on self-will. What happened to spiritual transformation and how I'm like now, living in the world of the Spirit. If you decide you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, and if I'm not, I need to maybe touch step one again. Then I'm ready to take certain steps, decision in 3 and 4 through 9. It says that some of these we balked. I thought what I could find an easier, softer way, which means I don't have to be really do a fourth step. I can write an autobiography. Besides, I am in a relationship now, and she's a good girl, and my life is changing now, so I really know. One day I'll do my fourth step. Right. And I'll tell my sponsor a little bit, and I'll tell you some. I'll tell him some, but they don't need to know all of it. And I censor everything because it's about looking good. I couldn't, though. It says, with all the earnestness at our command, they're begging me to be fearless and thorough from the very start. I've tried to hold on to my old ideas, and I usually get drunk. The result was nil. I had to let go, absolutely. And there's a challenge. Now, sometimes we refer to this as a leap of faith. Take the leap of faith. And I share with you my experience. I have found that there's no such thing as a leap of faith. That's fear. That's agnosticism. That's self-reliance. My leap of faith, this is what my mind says. Take the leap of faith. You got to do it. I mean, right in the middle between the leap and the landing, I may not get there. Where's God in that? Who's giving me the inspiration and the encouragement and allow me to listen to a teacher who's saying, you need to go from there to there? God. And who's going to catch me when I land? God. In God's world, there is no gravity. He's in the middle, going to catch me. There's no leap of faith. It's just another step. I just never walked it yet. So if I have a sponsor that I believe that he believes or she believes, and I see them living in the sunlight of spirit, and I want what you have to offer, then I just grab onto their hand, literally and figuratively, hold their hand, the same thing with this power called God, and somewhere I land on the other side of the archway. And I look back and say, it was the innocent climb. It wasn't so bad. And it was a hell of a lot better than worshiping a bottle of Jack Daniels. But it meant I had to surrender some ideas. Let go, absolutely. My old ideas, my perceptions and conceptions about everything in my life. What an order. I can't go through with it. What's the alternative? Drink and die. Okay, keep moving. I don't know about this power called God. As Mick says, you're willing? Okay, let's keep moving. Let's keep moving. Lack of power is my dilemma. I need power yesterday. I don't have time to sit around. And I'll pass over to Mick just a quick story. I was sitting with Mark H. was in Staten Island, and he was staying at a friend of mine, Tommy's house. And we had this drunk come in, a friend of Tom Needham's. The guy was in rough shape. And we sat around, it was about 15, 20 of us. We did a third step prayer. And Mark's talking to this guy about need power. We all held hands, we did a third step prayer. And he sat down and said, let's start step four with this guy. And a guy came up with 7 names, I'll never forget it. And I'm thinking, oh my God, he's in serious trouble. Mark says, good enough, let's go. Moved him right there at the table. And the next day he was out making amends. Needed power, not in 90 days. Now, tonight, right now, we need to access something. And he had to experience some hitting on the ego, some death to self, to experience some power. God is gracious. God doesn't withhold everything and say, "When let me think about it. I'll get back to you. Make 90 meetings in 90 days, and I'll give you some of me." I mean, it just doesn't happen. Constantly searching outside myself, and all I have to do is go in, which is what the work does. And that's more frightening thing than anything in the whole world. Go inside. I'd rather blame you and look outside. I'd rather get stuff to make me feel good. Based on my experience, that doesn't work. Rarely have we seen a person fail who follows this path. Huh?
So. Thank you, Peter. So this radical program, if you have decided you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. Isn't that interesting? I mean, I've had a new meaning for that come into my life. If you have decided you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. That's interesting, right? It's not like we're going to talk you into it. We're going to cajole. Excuse me. It's up to you. It's your life. How much do you want this? If you don't want to get sober and you don't want to stop drinking, guess what? You're not going to. Right? But what if you do? Then you find out there's an alcoholic living inside of you. Then you're going to have to be willing. You don't have to do anything but die, P.S. Mm. But then you're going to be willing to go to any lengths. Then you're ready to take certain steps. I don't know. I just found it interesting. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. But we could not. I was an escape artist all my life. I ran. What is your response, Mickey, to this difficulty? Run, 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 run. Right? Now I got squarely confronted with life and death. And I stood at the foot of the steps of 1311 York Street, and the steps, that's a long flight of stairs. It looked like Mount Everest. And I stood seriously at the bottom of them on February 12th, 1974. And I looked up those steps and I thought, when I walk up those steps and go through that door, my whole life is going to change. It's not going to be the same ever again. And just as an aside, I kept waiting for when was my life going to return to normal. Right? And it's like, I'm in here, we're all singing the camp song, and we're all doing the thing and all that stuff. And I'm going, yeah, yeah, that's great. When do I get to go home? This is home. That's how far I was away from sanity, how far I was away from Mickey, and how far I was away from God. I just wanted to go home. And it felt so artificial for so long. But the alternative was really serious, more serious than anything I'd had in my life. Mm. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Can I get a bottle of water or a glass of water, please? Thank you. I got a Mickey in my throat. Thank you very much. Whatever.
Need
Who
a
is
drink?
This guy?
Need a drink, Mick?
I need a drink. With all the earnestness our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas and catch this. And the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Isn't that interesting? I mean, here I am going through life. I had a guy tell me, a priest actually, I was working in Kill, Mississippi in 1965. And he looked at this, the brother who worked with him said, you know, Mickey, he said, I'd like to give you a can of black paint and a can of white paint and send you out to the world. He said, there is no gray in your world. It's either hot or cold. We're going to do it or we're not going to do it. What's the deal? And then I came into a fellowship that puts that sentence in the book. I thought, I'm home. This is great. Half measures availed us nothing. They don't avail us half. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Complete abandon. Let go absolutely, abandon ourselves utterly. They're giving us something. So we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him, or don't. Because we don't have to understand God to go with God. Decision comes from a Latin word that is the same as incision. The word decision means to cut. That's why if I say, I think I'll do something, that's one kind of a position. Or, I am making a decision to do something has spiritual power. I'm going to cut. I'm going this way, I'm going to cut that, and I'm going to go that way. That's my intention. That's the spiritual move I'm making now. I know you guys have all been beaten to death with the three frogs, but for the couple of people who haven't heard it, and I'm sharing this with you because it helped me understand exactly, because I had an expectation at step three that if I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I'm there. We're good. I didn't understand there was work. Or it would be a three-step program. Three frogs sitting on a log. One of them makes a decision to go into the pond. How many frogs are there on the log? And the answer is not what I said. There are three frogs on the log. Why? Because only thing this frog did is make a decision to go into the pond. If he's going to get into the pond, he's got to jump. He's got to go. He's got to take action. Or he won't end up in the pond. He'll be sitting there on that log for a long time wondering why he's not in the pond. Right? So, I'm going to cut this path and I'm going to go there. Why would I want to do that? I know I have a fire-breathing dragon behind me. I know this. And the road ahead is dark. I don't know what's down that road. But I know I have a fire-breathing dragon behind me. So I'm going down that road. Where's it going to lead? Is it going to be okay? Am I going to be okay? I don't know. I know I'm going to die otherwise. So the blessing is that I've been given alcoholism. It's the greatest gift I've ever gotten in my life. Right? Any disease that's going to lash me to God has got to be good. And like the master said, a good tree, as Peter said earlier, bears good fruit. It's not rocket science. How do I know it's a good tree? It bears good fruit. If this was the cult we suspected it might be, right? We would come out warped, twisted, lost, and probably dying. But it isn't that. This is life-giving. But it's so counterculture that it occurred to me. We celebrated our 40th, Marie's 40 years in Al-Anon, and I'm 40 years in AA. We celebrated our 40th anniversary at the church that we go to. And we asked if we could have this party over there, and they said, what's the party about? And I said, I'm 40 years sober, and we sent out flyers. People thought, even in AA, that it was our 40th wedding anniversary. And I was going to save this for later, but I'll introduce my children to you now. We have three children. The oldest is a daughter. And what's the date today? 19th. The 19th. Tomorrow she will be 43 years old. Yay! And she is a sober alcoholic. Yay! And she's 10 years sober now. I'll talk more about her later, I know. And I would put my life in her hands in a moment. And I just really love her. We named her Amy after the French ami because we had this gift. The first time Marie and I got close, we created Amy. And she told me, and see, I asked her to marry me. Marie and I knew each other 3 months before we were married. I was a singer. I was a folk singer. And I was doing my first professional engagement and singing in this bar. And Marie was the hostess in the bar across the hall. And the guy told us, at 9 o'clock, you have to sing whether there's anybody in here or not. I'm paying you. It's like that. Now, why are they always like that? But anyway. Okay. So she wanders in on a break, and she is our only audience. It's me and my partner, singing partner, and Marie is our audience, and she's sitting there. She's drunk, and I'm sober. It was the last time ever. And I thought that she said, here's what I thought she said. Hi, my name is Murray. I thought, God, a woman named Murray, I got to get to know her. This is terrific. And I looked at her and I said, I will never let her go. I fell in love with her right then. And 3 months later, we were married. And I asked her to marry me the night before she found out she was pregnant. See how kind God is? I got that in the bank forever. Never a question. And Amy did the math on that one finally, one day in our kitchen. She's going, wait a minute. What is this? I said, honey, we named you Friend, because when she told me that she was pregnant, I thought all the buttons were going to pop off on my shirt. My chest swelled up, and I grabbed her, and I took her out to lunch, and I told everybody in that restaurant we were going to have a baby. God gives us some very important gifts, huh, sometimes. Anyway, we have a daughter, Amy, and she lives in Illinois, and she's 10 years sober. She is married to an alcoholic. I was his sponsor. And when I was sponsoring these young men, I had a whole bunch of young single men. We would talk about the care and feeding of a woman. We would talk about dating. And invariably, in the course of the conversation, I would say, I wonder where the woman is God has for you tonight. I wonder what she's doing. I didn't know she was upstairs with this guy. It takes some brass, right? To ask your sponsor, can I take your daughter out? No. Thank you. My derriere is not up to these chairs. Thank you so much, Jack. God bless you. I thought I was going to die last night in this chair. I mean, iron chairs, who invented that? So, and thank you very much, Jack. So, yay, Jack. So I did not know that he was interested in our daughter. And so I did, however, get a chance to hear his fifth step before I found out. He's a good man. He's a good man. And they have 7 children. And from the time she was a little girl, she wanted to be a mom and a wife. That's all she ever wanted. And she's a good mom and she's a good wife. And her husband's a great guy. And then we have a middle son. And he's married and he has 2 daughters and he lives in Buffalo, New York. And then came Peter. And Peter was a rascal and twice tattooed, and Mr. Hempo Grandissimo, and all of this, right? And he is a Catholic priest. And so we sent out flyers, and we said to people, we're going to be celebrating our 40th anniversary. Please come. We're going to have Mass before we have our party. You're so welcome. You're invited. If you don't want to come, that's fine too. And so Peter said this Mass. And he said, I'm really intimidated to be up here saying Mass before you guys. We had such a mixed bag here. And he said, it took me years in the seminary before I figured out that spiritual direction did not come with expletives from listening to his father do spiritual direction on the phone. Anyway, whatever. Okay. Nice, huh? So we had this party. Where is this story going? Okay, we had this party. And the thing I discovered, and we had people from the parish we invited. Please come on in, you know, and they're saying, they're sitting with us. We are a subculture. We are a subculture in our country, in the world. And it was like, people would say, and, you know, what's the occasion? And I'd say, you know, I'm sober and Alcoholics Anonymous and this kind of stuff. And it just struck me, I don't know why I'm telling this story. I guess I'm telling this story because the price of my life is that I be in this subculture with you. If somebody were to ask me, Mickey, what is life on earth like if you're not alcoholic? I couldn't answer it. I don't know. Do you understand? And we always are saying that normal person, that normal person. And you know, what do they think? And we want to think like a gentleman. I'm misquoting the book. That's another story I ruined. Okay. So, you know, we want all of that stuff and that normal person. I have no idea what that's like. I have no idea. I've been alcoholic all my life. And I get to live and breathe and walk and serve with you. And we get to walk with each other. But we are a subculture. If you are looking for us, P.S., in a book of psychology, you will find us in the abnormal psychology section. Like Peter was saying, it's not that other person who's mentally ill. I'm mentally ill. It's not that other person who's emotionally struggling. I'm emotionally struggling. Every day, me and the vulture. Right? So what's the price of freedom? The price of freedom is that I am commissioned by God to be Mickey Musset. That's it. Right? This shirt, I got it in Manhattan yesterday. It's like it says, the real, the genuine. This is it. I hated Mickey Musset. Right? And James Taylor has a song, and in one of the lyrics, it is, he says, to sit in the dark and be somebody else. Right? I'm supposed to be in the light, and I'm supposed to be this man. This man. Okay, the only way I'm going to get to the truth, and we're here for transformation, as I said yesterday, not to be somebody else, but to be who we truly are. And it's good enough. It's good enough. And each one of us are going to have people that we're going to that are going to reach out to us, and they're only going to hear you. They're not going to hear me. They're not going to hear Peter. They're only going to hear you. That's why God made more than three of us. We have work to do. So, this making this decision, I'm going with you, God. I don't know, as Peter said, where we're going, but I am making this decision, this spiritual, powerful move to go with you. And then, you know, I have all this work to do to get with you, to be with you, to surrender to you. So we made a decision that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director, the guy told me. Mickey, do you need a director? A director, he says, is a person who tells the actor when to show up, what to say, where to stand, when to shut up, and when to leave. Do you need that? I said, oh, man, do I need that. Oh, man. You know? And he is the dad, and we are the children. Dad, can I have the keys for the car tonight? He is the principal, and I'm his agent. I was in an ad agency for 25 years. I carried out my principal's wishes. Okay, I signed contracts for my principal. I did these things for my client. But I am God's representative. What? What? As we all did, I used to think, God, if you ever found out who I am, you would not want to be around me. Right? And this is who God commissioned to go out and do the job. And we are who God commissioned to go out and do the job. And blah, blah, blah. It's the best story there is. It's the greatest show on earth. We are in miracle country. Peter, that's what I got.
When Mick was talking about how we're abnormal, how the world perceives us. I can only imagine. I was living in Staten Island, and my family and I had just moved out there, and I came home. I was driving drunk, and I hit a telephone pole driving my brother's car without his permission. And I totaled the car. I mean, the telephone pole was basically sitting on, like, the dashboard. And in this drunken, I remember there was blood. I was lucky to be alive. I was really banged up, took about 20 stitches in my head and some other damage. And I recuperated. And it was maybe 2 or 3 months later, about maybe 20 feet from that telephone pole is a fire hydrant. I hit the fire hydrant drunk. The water was shooting up, and the car turned around, was heading down this street called Highland Boulevard the wrong way, and I'm trying to catch up to the car, and I got another gash in my head, and my shoulders banged up, and whiplash, and okay. My dad sits me down and says, and I'll clean up the language, "What is wrong with you? How could you hit a telephone pole and 20 feet away, the same corner, hit the fire hydrant? Didn't you know that turn is sharp?" I just, when I'm drunk, everything looks the same, you know. He couldn't understand what was wrong with me. What is wrong with you? And my brothers backed it up with some of their language, and I cleaned it up, and it went, "What is wrong with you?" Usually followed by, "When are you going to grow up?" You see, I can't see the world the way they see it, and vice versa. Now, you guys laugh, and I tell you about that, and you say, "Oh, it happened to me. I get it," because we know what we're doing. We know how we operate. In fact, this is the only place on the planet where I can tell you the most god-awful things I've ever done, and you said, "Here's my number. Give me a call." I mean, So that's how we operate, and usually go through life pointing fingers at everyone. And as I was told, I'm on a horse riding backwards, and I'm taking your inventory, who you're running the saddle the right way. Step 3, it tells me on page 60, some interesting language here. It says, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter diagnostic, where did it describe the alcoholic? In step 1, 43 pages. Chapter diagnostic, I get introduced to step 2. And our personal ventures before God and after God make three really important ideas here. That I'm an alcoholic, drunk or sober, and I can't manage my own life. And the belief system is because I'm sober and I got my year and everyone gives me an applause, I'm now back in the saddle, I'm in charge. And the newcomer's got to make coffee and do all these things. Drunk or sober, I'm alcoholic, cannot manage my own life. I'm not cured. I'm recovered, but not cured. That probably no human power could relieve me of my alcoholism. That new, wonderful, euphoric relationship is not God. That money, that job, the new car, as great as it feels, is not God. No human power, no thing could relieve me of booze. Or I'll get some, maybe a quick relief. You know, I'm in a new relationship. I need to behave now. I'm going to straighten up and fly right. And that doesn't happen once the honeymoon phase is over, once the job gets old. I got this job. If I do good, I'm going to keep making money. Then the money gets old. And because I'm an alcoholic, I go back to drinking regardless of what's going on. So no human power is going to relieve me of this. God could, and what if he was sorted? What am I doing to seek? Am I seeking? What's my current relationship with God look like right now? If we could bump this up a little bit, if I have outstanding amends that I could be making this morning without causing more harm, and I'm not, my relationship with God is suffering, even though I don't think so. I have about 30 outstanding amends that I could be going to, making calls right now today, and it won't cause more harm. They just need to get done. In fact, I can do face-to-face with these folks, but I'm not doing it. So I'm claiming having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and I really haven't. Really, my relationship with God is not kind of on rocky ground right now because I'm not doing what he's asking me to do, is go fix things, go repair things, because I have to go to a workshop. I got home group. I have to go to the game. And that stuff has become less important. Am I convinced of the ABCs? doesn't tell me I'm taking step three, just means I'm at. And I always thought, you know, once I did the third step prayer, I was done. But there's some requirements that I had to be convinced that based on everything I've done so far, it doesn't work. And I got to look at some considerations here. On page 62, it's really great what it says. It says, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles. Where are roots on a tree underground? You can't see them. They're hidden and they go deep. And not drinking is just kind of cutting down the tree or maybe taking a couple of leaves or branches off. But I need to get down to causes and conditions. Ripped out root and branch and put new soil, God's soil. It says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. What do? I hurt you. You retaliate. I think you're just picking on me, and then I gossip about you. Or I seek to get revenge on you. It's the self-centered alcoholic. The world is after me. But God forbid I should take a look at my behavior for the last 6 months or a year or 30 or 40 years. I've been a tornado roaring through your life, right? It says they arise out. So our troubles are basically of our own making. That's the unmanageability that's within me. The unmanageability is not out there. When things aren't going my way out there with the GPS, I can kind of get through that. I navigate differently, God-centered rather than self-centered. It tells me above everything, I must be rid of selfishness. I must, or it's going to kill me. It doesn't tell me right now that booze is going to kill me. It tells me, like, resentment is the number one offender that destroys more alcoholics than anything else. This is telling me that my selfishness is going to kill me because it's going to trickle me back to a place where I need relief from a drink. It's the spiritual, the erosion of me growing spiritually when I'm living in this place. My experience with my inventory has been all the four steps and nightly reviews. If I threw all of them, if we threw all of our inventory, all of our inventory into a funnel, one word would come out. The common thread, fear. All of it. The whole thing is fear. And if I have fear about this issue, it means I don't believe God's working in this issue, which means I have some current agnosticism, which means I take over so I have some self-reliance, which means I'm a liar, which means I'm unmanageable, that area of my life at that moment. Now we times that by 10, 20, 30, 100, a whole life when we show up to step four. I can't fix this. I've tried every imaginable remedy to fix this, and I keep getting drunk. It keeps getting worse. So maybe at this point, the desire to find God is there. Each time I go through the work, say I'm going to the work for the 10th time, that means all the information I've acquired and all the experience I've got, when I'm about to go through the work at that moment, it gets in the way. And so we have to lay it aside or set it aside for a moment. And it'll meet me on the back end. But each time I look to have a new God experience, I move to have a new God experience, all that information suddenly gets in the way. I need to have a completely new experience. And I need to once again turn it back to God. Because if I don't, my illness will pull me right back. Huh? It says this is the how and why of it. I had to quit playing God. Why? Because it didn't work. Next, I decided in this drama of life, God's going to be our director and we're the principal, and Mickey talked about that. And all the way up to page 63 is really the third step considerations. Isn't it interesting on page 62, they talk about self, 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 self. On page 63, they're talking about less self, less and less about me, more and more about you. A shift, the promise of the shift. That is a third step consideration. And what I did with my sponsor the very first time was we met, we got on our knees and held hands, and he had me recite the third step prayer with him. Now, I knew the prayer, but suddenly in that kind of intimate setting, I almost forgot the prayer. I was so nervous thinking people are going to be looking at us, kneeling, holding hands in Brooklyn. Not a good idea for two guys to be doing this. It was just all. He actually told me, "How uncomfortable are you right now?" I'll never forget that. And I said, "Tony, I don't. This is a little weird for me." He says, "You've just touched." I never forget this. "You just touched all your old belief systems." He's, "What's wrong with two friends holding hands right now?" And they went on this whole tangent, and then we went back. And one of the assignments he had me do was write out the third step prayer as it appears in a big book, word for word. And then he had me write out my interpretation of that third step prayer in my language, so it became personal to me. And then we did the third step prayer, and then he didn't say, "Okay, work a good third step for the next 90 days. He gave me instructions for step four. Same thing I did with Mickey, same thing I did with Mark, same thing I've always done. Third step prayer, how do I do step 3, 4 through 9? And somewhere in there, the shift happens. But it's my contract. I signed the contract to turn things over, everything over to God, and I follow through with action in 4 through 9, and I start to take stock of myself. Make sense? Okay. You got anything?
I just thought, you know, we're together. What would you think about reciting the third step prayer together? Does that have some appeal?
Sounds good.
We, huh? We. So just stay in your seats, and if you don't know the prayer, then open your book or look on somebody else's book. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, "God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always." I love the way, and I'm sure we've all talked about this, that the Bill structures his sentences sometimes. So they give us the prayer, and then afterwards they say, "We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly." And I haven't found any wiggle room in the word utterly. Okay, now to him. I'd like to make mention of, "Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness." No victory, no witness. It's a promise. "Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness," means he's going to take away my difficulties. All of them, one shot, not my experience. But he is going to take away my difficulties so that I can tell somebody, after 13 years, we were able to refinance our home. We got that. We got this crazy credit score. He did that. He put integrity in my heart. He put integrity in our actions. God did that. God did that. I was talking with a gentleman who had to go back to work. And he said, "You know, I see you up there." He said it with kindness and love. "Promoting your boot making." I said, "I want to be very clear about why I talk about my boot making. In my life, these were useless. I couldn't drive a nail with a hammer. And there are about 100 steps in making a pair of boots. It's all precision work all day long. And I am capable of doing incredibly precise work with these hands. It's a miracle. I even one time took a pair that I was working on of my boots to California to a step retreat weekend. And I said, "I'd like to pass this around. You can take a look at it." This guy rolled his eyes like, "Oh my God." I wasn't selling boots. I was selling God. If I can do that, and P.S., I'm about as much a cowboy as you are. Just for the record, if I can do that, who is God? And when I paint these religious pictures, aside from the fact that I get to spend about 4 weeks this close to an angel, it's visible prayer. If you don't have a spiritual director and you don't pray, you cannot paint an icon. Are they the greatest icons anybody ever seen? No, they're not. But they're the greatest icon I can paint with God. That's why I talk about those things. So this is for all of our lives. For all of our lives. Marie just made a purse for one of my customers in Florida. Ask her to show it to you. She has a picture on her phone. Ask her to show it to you. My God, it dropped my jaw. I couldn't believe it. So Marie and I are in the business professionally of creating beauty. That's it. Who is God? If sometimes you think God is cranky and a pain in the neck, remember that God created tropical fish. If he doesn't have a sense of humor, they got fish that look like they're going this way and that way at the same time. He's got a sense of humor. And think of his color sense. I mean, he's rocking. He's got these fish that we can't take our eyes off. The God who made tropical fish made us. Peter, I am finished. Are you finished?
Okay. Guys, want to go to lunch?
Let's do that. Have a nice lunch. Thank you.
My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. Just so everybody knows, we're recording this weekend, so if anybody wants to get the full CD set of this weekend, please place your order by 5 o'clock today, and then pre-ordered CDs will be available a few minutes after the last session ends on Sunday. Thank you.
Please give us 10 to 15 minutes to set up for lunch. Lunch isn't going to begin until 12 o'clock. There's a 10 to 15 minute setup period. Lunch will be from 12 to 12:45, and we will begin the next session at 12:45.
I can ask it for you later. Okay.
Mark spelled with a C. You forgot your name tag. Please come up.
Danny, 1 second, Danny. 1 second. Also, we have a Fellowship of the Spirit going on in Arizona. You can come get more information here. And we have the Gotham City Roundup, guys. Another conference coming up in New York City. There's flyers up front. It's a must attend. Lunch will be ready. For those of us who are vegans or vegetarians, we have substitutes for you. Wraps, sandwiches, healthy options.
Mark, we have your name tag. Please come up to the front to get your name tag. There were two peanuts. One was assaulted. What?
You gonna sing a song?
Maybe. We have one large t-shirt in the front. We only have, what? We have one large t-shirt at the registration desk and three small t-shirts. They are all black. This just in, they're only small t-shirts now. If you have any questions, go to the registration desk. Remember to move your car during Mass. What? 9. It may take a few minutes for lunch. Nah. What should I say? Everybody must have a name tag and be registered. If you are not registered, register now. And if you do not have a name tag, please go up to the front desk to get a name tag. Remember to move your car for Mass. Very important. Lunch is being served. Wet by the soda, so please be careful.
Thank you, Daniel.
The Ask-It basket is now out. The Ask-It basket is now out, so it is right over there by the t-shirts. Here, you.
Say the Ask-It basket.
Say it. The Ask-It basket. Here we have Joanne to explain.
If you have any questions you want to put in the basket, and then we'll go around and
answer
the speakers will answer the questions. It's right over there.
The Ask-It basket. If you have any questions about what the speaker said, we have the Ask-It basket right over there. The speaker will answer your question out loud. The Ask-It basket is right over there. Now, if you want to buy a t-shirt, please buy it now. We have one large t-shirt and three small t-shirts. Lunch is now being served, so you can go and get your lunch. In 8 minutes, you will get your lunch. Remember, only the committee and speakers have access to the kitchen. If you have this, you have access to the kitchen. If you want any information about upcoming events, please ask at the registration desk. If you lost your name tag, please go to the registration desk. Everybody must have a name tag. Whoever does not have a name tag will be given one. However, there were two peanuts. One was assaulted. What else? There are two tomatoes. The first one crossed the street. The second one got run over by a car. So the first one said to the second one, "Hey, ketchup." What's green and hangs from trees? Giraffe's nuts. I'm trying to ruin people's appetites. If you want any information about upcoming events, please go to the registration desk. We have CDs right next to the registration desk. If you have any questions about what the speaker says, please put it in the Ask It basket right by the registration desk. The speaker will answer the questions out loud. If you are not registered, you can register at the registration desk with me on the computer. Now, all right, now lunch is about to be served, so everybody line up in one big line, not two lines, one line. Not yet, but start lining up. Ladies' room is to my left, men's room is to the right, behind the stage. I said that! Please do not interrupt the speaker during the meeting. Remember to put your phone on mute or please shut it off. And stop hiding the phones back there.
Hey guys, don't forget the Ask It basket is by the registration desk. If you guys have questions, just put it in the Ask It basket by the yellow registration desk. Thank you.
The Ask It basket is right by the registration desk. Please put your questions in there. You ask for a piece of... Actually, there we will be putting piece of papers out for you guys to write on. Stop with the phones back there. Now, we are almost ready to serve lunch. Please wait calmly and orderly.